Someone saw me carrying my iPad up to the pulpit this morning and wondered if I was going to make you all look at the puppy pictures. But I think half of you I've seen already. The other half I'll see you later. So, I want to start by playing for you a little bit of a song that I truly loved growing up and have been known to sing in a loud voice to my grown children. So let me share this.
Hippopotamus is all I want. Mom says a hippo would eat me up, but then teacher says a hippo is a vegetarian. I want a hippopotamus for Christmas, the kind I saw last summer at the zoo.
Sing along if you know it.
We got a car with room for two, an R2 car garage. I feed him there and wash him there and give him his massage. I can see me now on Christmas morning creeping down the stairs. Oh, what joy and what surprise when I open up my eyes to see my hippo hero standing there.
Very good.
Hippopotamus for Christmas. Only a hippopotamus will do. No crocodiles or rhinoceroses. I only like hippopotamuses. And hippopotamuses like me too.
Yeah, thank you. Didn't expect it to be live. I think that we played that Captain Kangaroo Christmas album over and over and over again. I think as baby boomers, we had a wonderful Christmas time growing up. Some of the traditions may have faded as our parents have passed on, but we still maintain a good element of them. Also, these days, it seems that the commercial aspects of Christmas have taken over, and it's all about things. For me as a minister, it's frustrating to see the low attendance at the candlelight service on Christmas Eve. So I guess as I get older, I guess I just don't expect much anymore. For all the lights and the sparkle of Christmas, part of the experience for some people is a low-level frustration from unmet expectations like that hippopotamus. The problem of Christmas is that we've set our sights so high that we expect so much of Christmas that it rarely happens the way we want it to. Some of us have simply stopped trying so hard, so whatever happens is a pleasant surprise. Now, I come from a big Christmas family. Growing up, as the holidays approached, my mother began baking at least 10 or 12 different kinds of Christmas cookies. And she was always making some sort of Christmas ornament with Mrs. Schley from up the street to give away to their special friends. Next came the rehearsing and setting of lights for one of Harry Clark's Christmas extravaganzas. There was the cleaning of the house and the polishing of the silver and the hauling out of boxes and boxes of decorations. In our family, the traditional English Christmas dinner of roast beef and Yorkshire pudding was our custom. And it was always and still is topped off by a flaming plum pudding. Each Christmas was a production of mammoth proportions, executed with precision and even joy. It seems that these days all we have to do is to look through Martha Stewart's Living magazine and we begin to feel that we might never be able to produce a Christmas that looks like hers. She set the bar so high for those of us who think we might like to try that we give up before we're even started. Now, the event that we celebrate 1 week from today was not an organized and glitzy event. It would never have made it into Martha Stewart's Living, and No one involved even knew much about what was to take place. It was an unanticipated, unexpected, imperfect, disorganized, and in general, a pretty messy event. There was no silver, no crystal goblets, or roast beef. The birth of Jesus was not planned. There were no invitations sent, and no reservations were made. The way Luke tells the story, Mary and Joseph had been traveling probably for a week or so from Nazareth, Joseph's hometown. On a dark night outside of Bethlehem, not far from Jerusalem, Mary, who was pregnant, went into labor. They tried to find room in the inn, but it was full. But thankfully, the innkeeper was not a person who was insensitive about what was to happen, whether there was a room or no room. So he offered the travelers some shelter from the cold, a resting place in the stable. There, Mary, surrounded by the smells and sounds of stable animals, donkeys and cows, perhaps a few chickens and some barn cats, gave birth to a healthy baby boy. No one knows really whether there was a midwife that was available, but I imagine that it was Joseph who helped to deliver his son in the dark night by the light of a lamp. They wrapped him in the customary manner with bands of soft cloth, swaddling clothes. And because there was no other cradle, they placed him in a cow's feed box, a manger. The way Luke tells it, it was a birth with a threshold of exceedingly low expectations. Chances are something could have gone wrong on that night, and hope might have been lost forever. But within this story is the story of God coming into human history. That tiny baby, Luke tells us, represents the beginning of a phenomena of hope and a phenomena of love that countered the Roman rule of that time and gave the people a new vision of their own humanity and divinity. Those early writers and other witnesses imagined that in that moment of low expectation and near miss, something mysteriously remarkable happened, and life was turned toward the new and the hopeful again. This is a story that is remarkable in its attempt to tell us about who we are and how we might expect to live and move and have our being while we're on this earth. Despite ourselves, we can't help imagining that somehow, somewhere, there's a God or some supreme force that's stronger, that's mightier, that's more powerful and omnipotent than we are. But in our story, Luke tells us that God came into human history as a poor, innocent, homeless baby born into a world that was filled with more than enough cruelty, a world filled with abuse and violence and war. It was a world in his day that was sharply divided between the rich and the poor, between the powerful and the powerless. In short, Luke imagined glory in the lowest, a God of small things, a God who was made manifest in the extraordinary, ordinary events of human life, like birth and death. Luke's world was not unlike the world we live in today. Christmas reminds us that God comes into the world of injustice and human suffering and violence, not as a conquering hero or as a ruler of a mighty empire. God entered the world through a humble human event, a baby born in a stable. And in that life, God is present and made real to us in the midst of our living and our dying. You see, our God is not off in a galaxy somewhere, remote and removed and distant. God is real and God is intimate and caring. As close to us as the next human being. And as deep within us as our own breath. This Christmas, expect God's coming at any time. In anything that is beautifully and simply human. In the birth of a baby. Or through the extraordinary efforts of common people working for peace and working for unity. Wherever love is shared and hope is passionately expressed. And compassion is given and received. I may have started out this Christmas season with really low expectations. But you know, secretly, I have very high ones for who we are and how we can live in this world. My hope today is that as we listen to the stories and we listen to the carols and we gather around trees with our families and our friends, that we hear the invitation to open our hearts and our lives to the love of God born among us again. I hope that we will pray for peace. Not just global peace, but peace here in the lives of our church family. And not stop there. But work for it in the name and for the sake of the Prince of Peace, whose birthday we celebrate. That's all I want for Christmas this year. Amen.